Jones and Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say.
About family,
women,
philosophy,
politics,
history,
people,
money,
pop culture,
kids,
fighting,
business,
life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour, can our celebrities be saved from killing themselves off? How did some of them get so rich anyway? And is Chicago becoming one big suburb? Ew.
This is Jones and Mike. Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike. Jones, I want to brainstorm with you. I need your feedback. I'm working on a thing. We need a mission. We need like a charity or some other greater purpose, a loftier goal that's behind this show. Like, you know, athletes start their own foundations. I think that's like a tax thing. I don't honestly think that's always real. But it feels good to the public when Peanut Tillman has his own, you know, after-school reading program for urban-dwelling children named Malik.
So
do
you
under nine.
So
a very, very complicated foundation that he was part of.
So you think you want to do something for children?
Well, I think that, like, a sports team, I think that it's always good for an entity to have a larger thing. So, like, I haven't done it a whole lot, but I like going to Feed God's Starving Children, where you, like, box up, like, food for, like, African kids. Kids in Africa, like, actually in Africa.
Right, okay.
And that's kind of weird because, you know, it's like, well, there's people closer to home that you could help. But I think it's always good for a media organization. You know, US 99 every year does a thing for St. Jude's Children's Hospital because I think there's some country music connection with that place.
So you want to do something local, but it doesn't have to be for kids.
Well, right. I just want something that's bigger than this. So we can say, yeah, we have this show, we have this platform, but we also have this, you know, this foundation or this mission. I think it should be save the celebrities. We should give fitness and health tips to celebrities.
So they can save themselves from themselves.
That's right. We have the most recent celebrity death trilogy has now been completed.
It was a brutal week.
Put a bow on it. I'm going to include Keith Emerson from Emerson, Lake and Palmer. You know, the organist.
Right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago. And then this week, within 24 hours of each other, we had Fife Dog from Tribe Called Quest. And, yeah. And a lot of people are like, who? What? And that's sad. They people should know who Fife Dog was.
I think a lot of people our age would, but immediately, once you get outside, like, kind of our immediate age range, I would say the awareness would fall off.
Yeah, I was shocked at the people that are in our generation that didn't know who Fife Dog was or A Tribe Called Quest, but that's okay. That's fine. It gave me an opportunity to educate them. The white bread folks that I cavort with, they were still like, oh, I don't like it. I don't get it.
Oh, really? See, I had a lot of the reaction I had, at least on my Facebook peeps, people were reacting right away, posting a picture of an album or of a song they liked. They did seem to understand, know the band, be aware of Fife himself.
Is there a more representative track that you would like to select
No.
for people that are unfamiliar with Fife Dog and Tribe Called Quest?
Not that I can think of.
No. All right. Maybe I know that they had, you know, this is one of my favorites. This is a Ward tour from Midnight Marauders, the 1993 release from A Tribe Called Quest. Yeah, that's solid. That's solid groundbreaking stuff right there. And then 24 hours later, Gary Shandling died, who I have no, you know, emotional connection to at all. He had a jerk face, as far as I can tell.
He did. He did some funny stuff, but he did have a jerk face. But still, I was surprised. Those were two guys that I did not have on the radar where it was like, oh, okay.
They weren't in your death pool and
yeah,
the big bracket?
And not that they have like a death pool or a bracket, but there are some of those people I'm trying to think as an example. I mean, even like, let's say Bill Cosby died. I would be like, well, I mean, he was getting up there in years. That's certainly for a moment, it's shocking, but in context, not really.
Yeah, I have Mick Fleetwood. He's one of my top performers in my death pool bracket, the bracketology.
Yeah, I don't have it. I don't really do the death pool thing where I'm really.
Do you think it's tacky? Do you think it's low brow?
I just never, you know, I go to think of those names. Here's the thing. I go to think of the names, and then any names that come up with are like too easy. Like, even though he looks great, he's very active, like Dick Van Dyke. I would think of that name just because he's in his 90s. Now he looks like he's in his 70s and he's moving around like he's in his 50s. So I kind of expect to see him hit the 100 marker. But at the same time, I never really get that good one where they're like, oh, I never would have thought of that, but I think you're right. You know, and then, and honestly, then there are all sorts of people where, like, I would have thought they would have been dead. God, who died recently? And I was like, oh man, I had already thought that they were dead. Actually, you know what? Actually, this week, yeah, when Obama went down to Cuba, and he was like, they went down there and people were criticizing him. It was this tour of apology and Castro was smirking at him. And then for a split second, I was like, it's Raul Castro because Fidel's right. He's dead. And then I looked it up. He's not dead.
Right.
But I never am really sure who's dead and who's not dead. So I'd have to put a lot of work into it to get any good at it.
Yeah.
You're wanting to extend the lives of these celebrities.
Yeah, they can't be trusted to make better, you know, good life choices.
Well, I have to say, with both of the gentlemen who passed this week, both the ones that we most recently mentioned, Fife and Gary Shandling, yeah, I would have to say they fall under that category. When I read that Fife, who's a diabetic, the funky diabetic.
Yeah, he, like, it became part of his persona.
Right. That, yeah. So the world knew, the hip-hop world knew that he was a diabetic, but he still...
I got to think, like, the hip-hop world is, like, it's got to be 60% diabetic.
It could be. If you're living in all of those, what are they, food deserts?
Yeah, that's right. It's Cheetos, it's Orange Pop, and nothing else in the hood for you to eat.
Yeah, no.
So
that's,
we need to either bring Mariano's into the hood. I'm sorry, but the Whole Foods in Inglewood, that's not going to nearly patch this hole.
Is there a Whole Foods in Inglewood?
They're expanding to Inglewood.
Oh wow!
So that's a good first
interesting
step.
That's an expensive first step.
It
How
is
about getting an Aldi in
that's,
there.
It's right.
That's crazy. That's actually almost disappointing, to be frank. But so, yeah, you know, you read where he was admitting, like, sugar, it's a disease. I can't stay away from it. It was like he was a junkie. And that's all he really had to do. And I'm thinking, like, isn't there, like, I don't know anything about diabetes and the pumps.
I still get confused, type 1, type 2,
yeah,
type A, type
way.
B. But I know, like, a couple of diabetics. You think I should just sit down with them and be like, all right, explain this to me.
And could an apple cut it? Like, could an apple feed whatever is kind of could an apple balance your sugars in a way that would make Mountain Dew or Skittles obsolete? But it sounded to me like Fife was just constantly facing the Skittles or facing a Mountain Dew, and that was it.
That's right.
And it was just, you know, so that, but I, on that level, I was like, huh, there was an addiction there. The one that really, where I went, wow, there is a choice where you could have gotten out of your own way.
Right.
And when I read that Gary Shandling had died and was openly telling people that he was planning to go to the emergency room the next day.
Ooh, a little late.
I kind of almost read that. I was like, that's actually a suicide. If you make a plan to go to the emergency room for the following day,
that's right,
that's suicide. Because the emergency room is right now. It's not the next day.
Yeah, I think that's like that's why they call it the emergency room. It's not the schedule an appointment room. It's you're bleeding to death. You need help right now.
Well, now you think about it, though, too, like the people who have, when you looked at the case of Fife and his dietary choices, and he's putting that on an addiction, but Gary Shandling just going, yeah, I'll go to the emergency room tomorrow.
And then he flashed that smile, that omnipresent jerk smile.
Right. I just think, like, how many people are out there, and maybe there is more in Celebrityville that go this route, that make these illogical health choices.
That's right.
The worst health logic. Okay, Fife maybe had an addiction, but yeah. Gary Shandling, you're going to the emergency room the next day? Bad health logic, and I think there's more cases of that.
Yeah.
Than we think.
312-957-7210. If you are a celebrity, and that's the Jones and Mike celebrity hotline. It's only for celebrities who want help making better life choices. Up next, we'll talk more about your odd choices, Jones and Mike.
When it comes to finding a holistic doctor near you, where can you turn for help? When you need a cancer doctor who will advocate for a non-surgical, non-chemical course of treatment, where can you find her? When you need a chiropractor or acupuncturist, when you need help with ailments that many doctors and even hospitals just plain turn away, like Lyme disease, who can help you with natural solutions and strategies for diabetes? When you need help to find an integrative, functional, complementary, alternative approach, option, and practitioner, the Health Freedom Network is there. Since 2009, the Health Freedom Network has been a leading resource for natural medicine and health information and research. Now we're also your best resource to give you access to the top docs in a number of specialties, from cancer to stroke, and in modalities from chiropractic to dentistry. The Health Freedom Network's directory at healthfreedomnetwork.com. Better information for better choices. Find your new health practitioner at www.healthfreedomnetwork.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Fugazi's The Waiting Room. I don't have anything emergency room related. This is the best I could do on short notice, Jones.
That's fine. It works.
Making an appointment in your mind. Like, I'm imagining with his partner, Gary Shandling's like, you know, I just was a little winded going up the stairs there. Maybe I should go to the emergency room tomorrow. It's mind-blowing. I mean, is it possible that that's the state of the modern healthcare? Like, you think, like who uses the emergency room for healthcare? Like, illegals. No, it's actually Gary Shandling, who, like, when he's sick, he goes to the emergency room. You would think he'd be a man of means beyond that. Like, he'd have, like, a personal doctor. Even a doctor who might come to your house.
No, absolutely. That's why it's all the more mind-boggling. All the more mind-boggling.
It's crazy, dude.
Well, it's people that make odd health choices. And I do tend to believe that it goes the celebrity route kind of more than anyone else, which seems they would seem to have the means to make all the best decisions. They could do whatever they need to do.
Yeah, you would think he'd have like a guy, like his agent. We could call up Irving, his agent, and be like, Irv, I need help. Like, I don't have a GP.
Right.
You got anybody? You got a guy?
Well, you know, as I went through this thought process of okay, worst health logic, Shandling was certainly up there. Another one that I had thought about was there was years ago. Now he's a WWE wrestler, but at one time,
again,
the UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar, and I think years ago in the middle of his career,
mm-hmm.
UFC career, he's the champ. Things are going well. He gets, in 2009, he gets diverticulitis.
What is that?
Diverticulitis is this growth. It's like these little, I don't want to say like pus buildups, but it's like these little buildups that grow inside of your intestines that kind of prevent you from kind of flushing out your system properly.
Oh, will and then food you get kind of, trapped in there or something?
It can, and then it can become toxic because there's all these kind of, I guess I just have to say it, just like little pussy growths inside of your intestines.
Oh my God. I think I knew a dude, and I didn't like him either. I think he had that, and he couldn't eat like tomatoes because the seeds would get caught in those little little things. And I was kind of like, I was thinking instantly how I could sneak a tomato into a sandwich.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, so there.
Imagine facing a murder rap because you gave somebody a tomato when they had diverticulitis.
Right, no kidding.
That'd be my luck.
So yeah, this guy gets diverticulitis. And one of the things is he ate, his diet was all meat. He would occasionally eat potatoes, but no roughage, no fiber, no veg. By his own admission, he had not eaten a vegetable in years.
In years.
In years.
And he was a professional athlete.
Yeah, he just thought, like, I need protein. He just went Atkins crazy, like, protein is for athletes, I eat protein. So he would eat meat on top of meat, occasionally have a potato, but no other roughage, no salad, no kale, no broccoli,
nuts,
no grains, no fibers,
crazy,
nothing.
Just meat, and he meat and steroids, honestly. That's all he subsisted on.
So then he gets to a point where he becomes this champ, the diverticulitis kicks in, he has to have surgery, he almost died. He almost died going through this. They do the surgery, and then in 2011, he gets diverticulitis again.
Oops.
So it's one of those things where the logic, the crazy logic that you had the first go around, I'm an athlete, athletes need protein, I'm going to be the ultimate athlete,
right,
and
dude,
only eat protein.
Crazy, man.
And then crazy to have it happen to you again, it's just... the crazy choices that people can make, or what is it that goes? Because I'm constantly thinking about, okay, well, what exercise am I going to do today? What am I going to eat today? Like, even when I got up this morning, I thought, okay, after we're done here, I'm going to go mountain biking.
Yeah, this is why you need to be the celebrity whisperer when it comes to this stuff.
And then, but even
you're a great listener. You could totally man the Jones and Mike Celebrity Health Hotline.
I'd be happy to.
312-957-7210.
So, but I have, even in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I ate this morning, and then I'm going to eat this for lunch, and then I'm going to do the mountain biking thing, and then when I come back, I'm going to, like, I think through my day about my own health and fitness, and not even necessarily because I'm looking to be at a certain, like, body fat or anything like that. I just think that's a natural part of surviving, human survival.
I think it's
how do I stay active?
It's a sign of self-respect as well.
Yeah, how do
I love yourself?
Yeah, I do love myself.
You do.
I would like to one day die in my own arms.
That's right. You're staring into a compact mirror right now.
But I go through my days thinking, okay, what activities am I going to do? And how am I going to feed myself and get rest like that? But that's a natural, it's not vanity. It's a natural part of your day. And it amazes me when people do put any kind of attention on that, some of the oddest choices that they can make. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, one of my old friends, a guy that we knew back in high school. This guy would, when you'd go out late night burritos when you're in your 20s.
Alfaro's on Archer, yeah.
Okay, granted, not a great idea, but again, when you're 23, we would go out, and I'm telling you, this guy would get a burrito, and he would break a sweat with how much salt that he would shake on it.
Jeez,
now, yeah. I understand 20 years later, people are looking at that and going, okay, well, a natural additive versus these artificial additives is better, but he still went, he made a burrito salt block.
Yeah.
And whenever he would get challenged about it, you know, like, okay, dude, I get it, man, you know, but what, dude, you're kind of going a little heavy on the salt there. What are you going to, aren't you worried about that?
Yeah.
I'll change my habits after my first heart attack. Like, that was his sincere response.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
I will live this certain way.
Yeah.
And then my first heart attack will be the warning. Now, I don't know. Gary Shandling had multiple heart attacks.
We all
but
think
that
we
could
get
have been
like,
his first warning.
You think you get out, like, multiple choices, like, you're going to get that shot of the over the bow. It's like a very mild heart attack, almost like heartburn. Then you find out like 3 months later from your doctor, oh, you actually, I'm looking at your EKG here, you actually had a heart attack a few months ago.
Yeah, I got to straighten that out.
And then you go, oh, okay. Kind of like when I went and I got an MRI just for fun. And like they don't actually look at, like they can't see inside the artery, but they look at the outside. And what they actually do with the MRI is they measure the calcification on the outside of the artery. Because that is a indicator of what's inside, the cloggage inside. And like I had my lower anterior descending artery had like the calcification that would indicate that like I'm in like the 91st percentile, meaning like only 9% of people my age had like a worse worst score.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I may be actually a ticking time bomb.
When did you do
this?
Let's
hurry this up. Let's get this conversation over with. I don't know how much time I have.
Yeah, yeah. When did you do this?
This was about 5-6 years ago. I was about 34 at the time. I remember thinking, like, geez, I'm only 34. I already have, like, a problem, potentially.
And you did it for fun.
Well, no, I did it because I, you know, I had smoked since I was 14, and I did the burrito runs with that, you know, heretofore unnamed, you know, salt fan all the time. We went probably 3 times a week. The beer hasn't helped. My cracker penchant, eating oyster crackers, you know, like they're sunflower seeds, that hasn't helped. So I was like, I better go check this out. I got kids. I have life insurance and stuff, but I want to know what's going on. What's doing?
Okay, well, and then this kind of reminds me of another friend of mine I know who's a smoker. And sometimes when I challenge her, not challenge her, but say, hey, do you ever think, you know, about quitting smoking? I mean, people talk to you about it all the time and I don't like talking about it. But, oh, yeah, no, I figure once I get pregnant, yeah, I'll quit. And then at that point, I'll be done. I think that's kind of an illogical health decision. So along those same lines, where would you say, what effect did that MRI have on you in terms of making massive decisions where that was your Gary Shandling, I won't go to the ER tomorrow?
I mean, I think that it probably spurred me into, I'm going to run and I'm going to, you know, quit smoking and I'm going to eat. I don't really do burrito runs nearly as much as I used to, like maybe like 2 a year now, 3 a year maybe. So very rare, as opposed to 3 a week. So, I mean, I think that did kind of push me in the right direction, although I think I was already moving in the right direction by virtue of me shelling out a few $100 for a little MRI, like a Heart Check America type thing.
Right. So,
but I think that those are the markers. Those are the markers in your life when you have kids. Like, that's why you being like such a specimen, and you're not being a specimen because you're trying to get chicks even. You're just being a specimen. I don't know why, honestly. I don't know why you're not bald and 280 pounds. There's really no explanation.
Well, yeah, but it's like, I think that should be part of, and maybe that's the difference between modern men. Maybe I am more, I am closer related to, maybe if you went through my DNA, I'm still closer related to kind of the Paleolithic man or something, where I think it's natural to go, okay, I woke up today, how do I get through the day? Like, I think that should be a natural part of your thought process is, all right, how do I best get through this day so I get here tomorrow? Like, it's part of a survival instinct. And a survival instinct is eat right, drink water, keep the body moving. And it's interesting to me when people don't have that same reaction. I think you don't have to be religious about it if you like to have, you know, ice cream after dinner or whatever it is. I'm not saying like that's this horrible thing. But when you're looking at your own health and you're going, I'll go to the ER tomorrow, I'll wait for my first heart attack, or the MRI says this. Now, where do you think you would fall on the scale now? You were in the 91st percentile, so only 9% of people your age would have, what was it, their arteries would be more exteriorly calcified?
That calcification, you know, measurement, you know, is indicative of an interior, you know, plaque buildup.
Okay.
And so for people who were 34 or whatever at that time, only 9% had a worse score than me.
Where do you think you would fall into that now?
Yeah, I don't really. I mean, I know there are like natural or, you know, dietary ways and certainly exercise to reduce plaque buildup. But I don't really know that I've focused on that. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think that I've improved very much. Let's just put it this way. Gary Shandling, everyone's looking so young, 66. That's the other thing. I think when you're dealing about, or when you're thinking about a celebrity, if they're like over 55, then that's gravy. We should be celebrating people who are over 55 instead of mourning like 66, so young. It's like, no, not really.
You're thinking the cocaine and the, and I'm not saying, I don't know that he was on it, but like typically in a celebrity lifestyle, the cocaine and the whiskey.
That's right. That's
piles
right.
Piles on a little bit more, a little bit quicker.
Well, like when people were like, wow, let me kill Mr. Just 70. It's like, just 70?
Yeah.
The guy drank a bottle of Jack Daniels. What did I read? That he drank a gallon of Jack Daniels every day for 30 years and smoked 2.5 packs of smokes a day?
It's amazing he made it.
But he had like a grabber or some issue, you know, within the last year. Or maybe he got diagnosed with cancer. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. And that's when he cut down to a pack a week. And he just had a screwdriver. Three to five screwdrivers a day. It's like, oh, I think the ship has sailed, man. I think you got to go out the Wally Noonan way. When he had esophageal cancer, God rest my father's soul, who died in 2005. In late 2004, he was having issues, and it was diagnosed as esophageal cancer. A lifetime of smoking, you know, had taken its toll. And, like, everyone in the family was, like, pressuring him to stop. And I was like, stop. That ship has sailed. Let him do his thing. And he did. He smoked right up until the end. Even after they, like, replaced his esophagus, he continued to smoke. Like, that's, like, akin to, like, smoking through your trach tube.
Right, yeah.
Like, and people do that. But I was like, no, just, hey, man, enjoy yourself if that's what I guess you want to do. Now is not the time to quit smoking. You need a new esophagus, for God's sakes. So smoke away.
And I would actually fall on your side of the aisle on that, where once, it, I mean, if you really look at it and you go, okay, the ship has absolutely sailed.
Like, we don't even see it on the horizon anymore.
Yeah, then I think you let that person live their life how they wanted to. So in that vein, I would almost, if I had to do just a quick analyzation between the illogical health scores of Wally Noonan and Mike Noonan, I would have to actually rate Wally even a little bit higher just with looking at that one.
What?
But looking at that one aspect of being in the hospital and still continuing to smoke because the ship had sailed at that point. At that point, it's not illogical. The ship has sailed. Getting to that point, certainly.
Well, and I think that's what spurred me on in my early 30s to be like, oh, I better make some lifestyle choices now rather than, you know, when I'm 66 and they are taking my esophagus out. So, and I think that that's what people do. They wait until it's too late, which is why we need to act now, Jones.
All right.
There are still celebrities out there to be saved. For example, when Gary Shandling died, I went, you know what? I wonder how Tom Jones is doing.
Oh, that's
Tom
a good
Jones
one.
Is still rocking, dude. He's still rocking.
Yeah, but see, he seems like a guy who always, even as he got on later in years, he still went to the weight room. He was still active. Who would be like a Val Kilmer?
Val Kilmer?
He looks pretty bad.
Does he?
Oh, yeah.
Does he look as bad as he did when he was Doc Holliday and he had liver failure or whatever? Or he had like
syphilis
or something.
I think they're really trying to cover up. He has a lot of health ailments.
Really?
But yeah, I think they say he's near death's door. But for years he had just been putting on like 10, 12 years ago, they would just show shots of him on the beach and he was just this huge gut, not taking care of himself at all.
No way. Yeah. Iceman? He's going to get iced? He's going to ice himself?
Actually, okay, if I had to go death pool, I would go the Iceman goes out, not George Gervin, but Val Kilmer goes out this year.
What?
2016.
Wow, you're abridging your 2016 predictions.
Yes.
Didn't
yes,
we I make am. Celebrity predictions in January?
Yeah.
And didn't we? I'm trying to remember what they were now.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'd have to go back and listen to them.
Well, honestly, I'll miss Vale, but so long as we've got Tom Jones, dude, I can totally
carry on.
See you, Vale. I gotta be honest. You were great. He was great as Elvis in True Romance.
He was great as Doc Holliday.
He was awesome. I'm your Huckleberry, but I mean, Tom Jones, listen to this guy.
I can't remember a woman.
I was looking to see if he's going to be, he's like in Australia right now. I wanted to see if you and I could hook up with him again at the House of Blues.
Isn't that crazy? Like, how old is he?
Like, I think he's like 82 now
and
or something.
He's still touring.
Touring. His armadillo in his trousers is still delighting men and women alike, even some children, all around the world.
He can't be.
It looks like he has a child in his trousers.
You have to be careful with that, though. His armadillo is delighting children. You didn't do him any favors there.
It is. It is like a small child is being smuggled into Brisbane right now in his trousers. Do you remember when you threw a giant yes. pair of panties up on stage and right. he acknowledged it?
He did. He did.
At the House of Blues, I went to Target and yeah. bought the biggest grandma panties I could find. They looked like a Holiday Inn towel in leopard print. And I didn't want to squeeze through the crowd to do it, so you went on a stealth mission, probably crawling on your hands and knees between people's legs.
Got right up to the front, launched it, and it was perfect, really, because I launched it up high, they unfurled, and then just, like, sailed down like a parachute.
Yeah, they did. They kind of, like, they unfurled and kind of hovered in midair for an instant. He was on, like, the left side of the stage. You threw it on the right side, and I saw him, and I got the biggest thrill seeing how ginormous they looked on the House of Blues stage. And then he came sauntering over to the other side, doing this song, probably, and he looked down at him, and his eyes got enormous.
Oh, that was great. Such a proud moment. Such a proud
That was
moment.
Really, yeah. And at the time, dude, like, we saw him, like, maybe five times inside of a two-year period. And I think we were honestly doing the calculation, like, how many more times are we going to see Tom Jones?
Right, we
and
were.
This was, like, 1997.
Yes, no, we were.
Through, like, 2002. We and even your mom went to see him
yeah.
with us.
Yeah, she God went rest with us her one soul. Time, yeah.
But and now, look, he's 14 years later. He's still rocking it.
That's crazy to me. Absolutely crazy.
So on the Fife Dog tip, for the uninitiated, Tribe Called Quest, they were very, very insightful in their lyrics and incisive, and they would give you glimpses into their lives. And a lot of what I first knew about the hip-hop industry and the music industry in general was revealed to me through their music. We're going to talk about a little bit about the finances of it all coming up next. It's Jones and Mike.
I've been very happy with the fish oil that I've received. I trust that it's PCB, mercury-free, it's clean, it's wild-caught, and it's the best stuff that I found.
Chris is just one of thousands of satisfied Pacific Rim customers around the world and here in Chicago. You need omega-3s daily, but most of us here in Chicago do not get nearly enough of them from our diet. Even worse, if you're like me, you eat too much beef, and that drives up your omega-6s. Those are the omegas that lead to inflammation in your joints and in your arteries. As I like to say, omega-3s counteract the beef sandwiches. They lower cholesterol, reduce inflammation, joint and back pain, boost brain function and eyesight, improve circulation and performance, open your lungs, and give you a healthier heart. Why are you not getting all of these benefits from Pacific Rim Omegas? Try Pacific Rim for free. Just pay the shipping. This is an exclusive offer just for listeners of this radio station. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com and get your free trial of Pacific Rim. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Let me tell you about the snakes, the fakes, the lies, the highs, and all of these industry shindigs. Where you see the pretty girls in the high animated world. Check it for a rapper with all the dough. If you take this shit, they want to know. And if you're gonna fall, they won't be around, y'all. So you still wanna do the show business? And you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really gotta rap and be all that. And prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
Here he is. So Fife Dog appears a little later on in this, but the Tribe Called Quest from the Low End Theory show business, and one of the lyrics in the song, you know, the whole song is about how inequitable the music business is. And this was one of the first times that, you know, it kind of became clear to me how taken advantage of artists sometimes are. There was a documentary that I don't even know if it was about a Tribe Called Quest or just if the guys in, you know, Q-Tip right there was featured in this documentary, where he talked about how they were, you know, selling out shows and they had a hit single and all this stuff. And as hip hop artists, they have to put on a certain, you know, although I don't think they did it to the extent of most hip hop dudes, but you have to put on a certain, you know, outward appearance of wealth. You know, he had to live kind of a double life because he was actually flat broke and he was like sleeping on his mom's couch.
Yeah, his first world
during
tour.
This.
He claimed to be sleeping on his mother's couch.
Crazy, crazy, dude. And so that was the first time the light bulb kind of went off in my head where I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize. And then as the years went on, I started to see like, oh, this is why Dave Matthews Band tours every year, because the record company takes all of their dough from their album sales. but they get to keep all their dough from performing. So this is why if you are a jam band and you can sell out, you know, 30,000 seats for 75 dates a year, you should do that. Make all the dough you can while you still can. So, you know, you brought this up just the other day because your mind is blown at the amount of money that you're reading some stars are worth.
Well, it was this week. I mean, it's, you know, you look at the passing of Fife and you think of how Fife Dog and how much a struggle it was for them to make money in the hip hop industry. And they were very honest about it, whereas other artists, like you said, put on the show and then try to cover it up and what have you.
Like 50 Cent being broke.
Absolutely. I still don't understand that one because we were always told he had all these other avenues for revenue, that he was one of the first guys in ground floor on the vitamin water and he was a billionaire. Like, what happened? I don't know. There's something going on there.
Well, and even the bankruptcy court is now having issues with him because he's still showing, and his lawyer is explaining it away. He's tweeting out pictures of himself with like stacks of cash, and his lawyer is going up before the bankruptcy court and being like, "Your Honor, in the hip hop world, my client is expected to continually project wealth to his fans."
Right, right.
So that's actually fake money he's posing with. I don't think the bankruptcy court is buying it.
Yeah, well, and that's a whole other topic, but on whether, you know, on whether he's hiding something or faking it or whatever.
See, they need help making better decisions.
They do. No, they do.
312-957-7210 celebrities.
Yes, Frances Bean Cobain, please call in. Did you see she's getting divorced this week?
Oh, she is.
23 years old.
I figured she was going to have such a well-adjusted life.
You were wrong.
What's wrong?
So 23 years old, she's getting divorced, and she is now making moves to protect her $450 million inheritance.
Wah-wah-wee-wah.
And that, when I read that, I was just floored. Because I thought to myself, did Kurt really, and I know, you know, there are royalties and things that happen after his death 20 years later, but is he really worth $450 million? That was my first thought. My second thought was, how odd is it that a guy who always dressed as though he was homeless and eschewed anything that had to do with money or corporate America is now worth $450 million? And if he was worth $450 million now, his estate or his name, whatever, what was he worth 20 years ago? He was certainly, and I knew 20 years ago he was worth money, but $450 million seemed like such an absurd number. And when I look back and I see like those stars who had such strong opinion, like in the 90s, those alt-rock stars had such strong opinions on who they were as people and, you know, their tastes and what was a sellout and what was, you know, corporate rock. And then all of a sudden to look back on it now and see some of the choices that they've made. And it was like, no, that was just all a ruse years ago that people like kind of dove into.
Well, okay, so are you saying that like behind the scenes he was a shrewd businessman and you know, really working the corporations over to get his lion's share, etc., but outwardly to the public he was dressing, you know, in a different way and faking like he was a man of the people and just about the arts and all that nonsense? Was he doing like a 50 Cent?
Could he have been? You know, I think that's possible. I think there was a duality there. He obviously wasn't a mentally healthy individual. Was there possibly a financial bipolarness to him where he made money, he had plenty of excess, but then there was something, obviously, you know, he took his own life, he was severely depressed. I wonder if there was a financial bipolarity to him.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you bring him up because I was just hearing that he hated Guns N' Roses.
Yes,
Guns N' Roses
he did.
In the news for doing their tour. They just announced a 21. Yeah, right, 21. The first 21. I'm sure they're going to tour for like 5 straight years, make like $600 million, and then go back to hating each other. But if their tour actually goes off, it's initially going to be 21 cities, not surprisingly, including Chicago. It's got to be. It's got to be, you know, what's the big? It's got to be Soldier Field, right?
Yeah, I haven't. They haven't put out the venues yet. It has to be whatever. What are they calling Tinley Park now? Is that still
yeah?
The
it's
first?
Like yeah. No, they changed it to like Harrah's Casino.
Whatever.
It's crappy. It's a crappy name.
I know. Whatever.
Because I actually, it sounds like they're playing. You know, it sounds like a band is like playing Harrah's Casino.
And I'm know.
Like, who wants to go to Joliet to see Harrah's in the Harrah's Casino venue? Oh yeah. No, it's in Tinley.
Yeah, no.
Like Hall & Oates playing Harrah's Casino in Tinley Park.
Yeah, I don't know. So whatever the sponsored New World Music Theater is.
Yeah.
I think that's at least that's the minimum, if not Soldier Field.
No, it's going to have to be Soldier Field, if you ask me. But beyond that, I heard that Kurt Cobain hated them, and apparently Axl Rose always loved Nirvana, or
yes.
He did at one point, and he wanted Nirvana to open up when Guns N' Roses and Metallica toured together. They did like some stadium tour in the early 90s, and apparently Kurt Cobain turned them down. Kind of citing like the, no man, we don't do things just for money. We do things about the art and the music, and you guys make crappy music. I hate your music, and I hate you because of it.
Right.
You're sellouts.
Right, exactly. He had Rolling Stone photos where he was wearing some bedraggled shirt that said corporate rock magazines still suck. And yet he's worth $450 million.
Yeah, I could see him being like Courtney, who I thought she was like a prostitute when they first met or something. Like she, but I bet she was a pretty shrewd or is a pretty shrewd businesswoman. And I could see her being the, yeah, don't worry about it, Kurt. I'm going to take care of all that stuff. You don't like all that icky stuff. You just sit in your bedroom, you know, with your heroin and your, you know, acoustic
shotgun.
Guitar and, you know, playing with your shotgun like your Fidel Castro. And I'll be out here working on the bills, working on the checkbook. So she, what I believe, was the driving force behind all of that.
Yeah.
And then maybe in his life back then, maybe he made like 30, 40, 50 mil. But because of the royalties of being both a writer and a performer, as he was, you get paid double. You know, I think that the compounding interest and maybe her shrewdly investing it since then, that's what ballooned it up to 450
that
large.
That still seems like here's where I still even struggle with that. Look, I'm not saying that these numbers are false. I'll assume that these numbers are accurate. It boggles my mind how his estate got to that level because, okay, if he was the guy, first of all, he died when he was 27. And when you think about it, even though they were around before 91, they were really only a marketable band from 91 till his death in 94.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a 3-year period. And about 10 or 11 or 12 years after his death, people really stopped buying music. It really became about digital music. You'd buy individual songs. Now people don't even do that. Now it's streaming, and the streaming fees are supposed to be so low. I just can't imagine. And they were so anti-corporate in tone. I can't imagine where all of those revenue streams would come in to get them to that point. And on top of that, Courtney Love always seemed to me, she went through so many years of just being this like fall down drug addict.
Yeah.
Where I'm trying to think. If I found out that Eddie Vedder was worth $450 million.
Oh, say it ain't so.
If Kurt Cobain is worth $450 million, Eddie Vedder has to be a billionaire. He had more successful albums. They've been touring and together for now 25 years. They still do huge venues.
But
what
he's still spending dough. That's the thing.
But
Kurt stopped spending money.
No,
and that's the best way to grow your wealth is to not spend any money.
That's why
the conspiracy is that Michael Jackson was whacked.
Well, no, I disagree.
He
well,
owed
now we're going
Sony tons of dough, and he owed lots
okay,
of creditors
we're going
tons
on
of
two
dough.
Different things, though,
and like he was spending like a drunken sailor on furlough. I cleaned that one up.
But that has
and his creditors
to do with-
went. You know what? We could like get all the windfall from your catalog and all of your royalties and all that without you spending lavishly.
Okay, those are two
million
different things,
a year.
Though. Michael Jackson and Eddie Vedder are two different things.
Right.
Eddie Vedder is still actively going out there and making money, and famously drives around a dented pickup truck. Like is one of these guys who is like Kurt
Cobain.
Well,
again, that's his outward appearance, but behind the scenes, he may be like crazy spending. Who knows? He may be into like all sorts of dopey charitable organizations. I mean, I'm sure there's a Pearl Jam for Kids Foundation.
Well, okay, but now
that's a money drain.
I still have to believe that he is well out earning whatever he is spending. Now, if you were to tell me he's worth $450 million, I could kind of see, well, look, he's never really had a drug or alcohol problem. He seems to be depressed at times, but I think that's part of the early 90s alt-rock
ennui.
Act.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's part of the act. He can't possibly be that upset all the
time. No, he looks pretty happy when he's at like hanging out with Theo, like his little lap dog.
Over the last couple of years, he seems to smile a little bit more. He'll actually play a Van Halen song at concerts and stuff. But he's a guy who I could see who would maybe have been a little bit more shrewd and be worth the $450 million. I just have to tell you, I couldn't see that coming from Kurt Cobain. And I'm shocked by it.
So I think that after you die, the licensing deals go crazy because there's a limited amount of intellectual property that was created. And so I think that if Eddie were to die, he'd be a lot better off financially. Like, dude, like Bob Marley's licensing, forget it.
I know.
You don't even want to know what the guy who started Island Records, I can't think of his name at the moment, but like he's the guy who basically created Bob Marley and controls his licensing assets, I think. Crazy amounts of money.
Yeah, I can't imagine though it's worth all that much knowing how much people have really stepped back from music. I mean, from the time that Bob Marley died, he had a good 20, 25, 30-year run where people were still really invested in music in general.
Are you going to burp? Were you going to burp there?
There was something that was working, and I didn't know what it was.
I didn't know if you were
going to
cry or like, boy, I loved Bob Marley, man. Bob Marley joint, cannonball coming.
I could see the Bob Marley licensing I get. I wonder how much even Eddie Vedder would be worth now going forward. The only thing that will be the game changer is if they start launching these hologram tours. Then I would go, okay, I could see them being worth that much more because I don't see – at once everything went digital, I don't get a sense that everyone went out and bought 10 again or bought versus
I think that that'll cheapen the brand. I think that'll expand the intellectual property, but not in a good way. Like, I think that maybe a game changer will be when AI, and I mean this in all seriousness, when someday they are able to take, you know, they can create a program that can mimic Kurt Cobain's singing and writing style to the point where it's as if Kurt Cobain is still creating
and making new material.
That's right.
God, that's so bizarre.
Like, I don't think that this song can be recreated, but if like they were able to, yeah, listen to him. The best Nirvana song that was ever made.
Really?
It's a bonus track on a charitable album that was called No Alternative.
Yes.
For HIV. For HIV. The business of HIV. See, he had a charity thing. He had a charitable bent. This is why, Jones and Mike, we need the Celebrity Better Decisions Hotline. This is called Verse, Chorus, Verse. It was like, back in the good old days of CDs and albums and stuff, they would have tracks that weren't even listed. So, but then it was like groundswell, like ground roots buzz that would, oh, did you hear there's a secret Nirvana track?
Yes, yeah.
Like track, like if, like the album was 13 tracks, like track 13, you let it roll for 4 minutes and then there's a bonus
another
track.
Song.
Yeah. It doesn't even really have a title. It's just called Verse, Chorus, Verse. But that's what I think that will happen, that they'll have like AI that will recreate him. But until then, the money is in the limited amount of tangible assets that exist while you're alive. And that's what makes it more valuable. It's kind of like why our currency is so worth nothing, because they just keep printing it. But it means nothing. It's just we're all agreeing that these pieces of paper are worth something.
Yeah.
And you know what? Whenever the government needs more, they just print another billion sheets of paper. But gold is in limited supply. There's only so much gold. So it actually should be worth like 5 times what it's worth. But whatever. That's another conversation for another day. Hopefully led by people that know what they're talking about. But that limited supply of that what we believe to be a finite asset, like oil or gold, that's more powerful than these sheets of paper that nobody even knows how much of it is even in existence.
Your AI suggestion concerns me.
That concerns you?
Yeah.
You're loving that idea, though.
Not really.
And that's I just came up with that. I literally just came up with
but
that.
But I can see it as, I can see that as being plausible. I don't know. I don't like that idea. You know I hate artificial intelligence.
Yeah, well, you're afraid. You're afraid. There's no reason to be afraid.
Oh, there's plenty of reason to be afraid.
Dude, did you see that the Microsoft had that bot this week called Tay that went off the rails?
Yeah.
Ken, that's not the first time that's
racialist.
Happened. That's not the first time that's happened, and I can't find any documentation about it, but Microsoft did the same thing a few years ago, and they had to shut, like, another bot down.
Hey, don't worry. They'll eventually figure it out, and then we'll need to be worried.
Have you ever listened to a radio show and thought, I could do better than that? Who hasn't? But have you ever thought about actually doing your own show? Now that seems a little more daunting for most people. Hosting your own show helps spread the word about you and your expertise, your business, product or service, charity, or any organization at all. When you have your own show, people listen to you, get the credibility, authority, and visibility you deserve. Chicago Pod Show has the studios, equipment, people, and experience to help you launch your own show almost instantly. Host a show that's heard 24/7 on iTunes, YouTube, mobile apps, websites, or even on the radio. Chicago Pod Show does it all for you. All you have to do is be the star or the expert you already are. Find out how easy getting your own soapbox can be. Visit ChicagoPodShow.com or call 312-725-8017. ChicagoPodShow.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at JonesandMike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
It's Jones and Mike. So we want to know something. We have a one question poll on our Facebook page, Jones and Mike. You know, Facebook.com/Jones and Mike. We want to know if you want a stream, 24/7 stream of the show. It's fine if you don't. But I defected from terrestrial radio this week, Jones, and I got a subscription to Sirius XM. And I love it.
I love it, dude.
I love it. You got Stern. Stern is the best. He's the best. There's nothing on radio like Stern. Although I started to kind of, he does like kind of lean on mentally challenged people a little bit too much.
Yeah, I never got on board with that. I still can't. That was always a radio bit I never could get into. Taking advantage of the mentally ill person or the homeless. That was another thing years ago when Kevin Matthews was in town. He was like, oh, hey, we're doing news read by the homeless. It's like, dude.
Well, who doesn't love that?
I think that's idiotic. That's so lowbrow.
I actually host my show with mentally challenged people. Like, that's how respectful I am. But, Howard brings in, you know, High Pitch Eric. Okay. And all these people with all these maladies, people in wheelchairs. But he's not, he seems to be kind of, you know, he's making fun of them, but he doesn't outwardly make fun of them.
Yeah, I think he's a great interviewer, and I think he's an interesting dude. I could never get on board with any, the Whack Pack stuff never excited me.
Yeah, and you're right. So I've noticed that, you know, that's, I still laugh. I still laugh at the bits that they do with these folks, and the folks seem to be, you know, no one's making them, and I don't really get the feeling that that they're incapacitated. They're just people with different challenges. But it's not like, I don't feel like they're being exploited, like they don't know what's going on.
I don't know. Do you really think Beetlejuice completely understands what's going on?
I think he died. Didn't I think
he
that's
may
the thing.
Have.
His
I don't know.
Packers,
a lot of they're starting to die.
Yeah, they're starting to die off. So
and then that's awkward because then he has to go on the air and pretend like he is sad about it.
I don't know. I think that Howard actually is very, so I juxtapose Howard with Mancow, and Mancow is the cheap pseudo facsimile of Howard, where he would have a retarded guy on, but like he was, you really got the feeling that the retarded guy wasn't in on the joke. And when he died, when Cowboy Ray died outside of Bohica's on Cicero, like
he got run over.
Yeah. He got hit by a car, like leaving some bar appearance or something. hit and run. They never found the guy. And I never really felt like a man-cow cared. But I feel like a Howard Stern would care. Like, there's an empathy that comes across. There's a realness about Howard Stern that it's evident in this other observation about his show that I'll share with you. His show, when he's interviewing all these celebrities, he's just talking to them. He's not reading. You don't get the feeling. He's very well prepared. Whoever prepares
him. Why are we doing a Howard Stern commercial?
Well, I'm not doing a commercial for him so much as talking about what makes radio good and real and why I prefer certain things over others and why I want this show to be on a larger platform, because it is real. It's not rehearsed or, you know, pre-planned out or whatever. His show has that real feeling, and he, you know, and it's evident in the fact that whenever he's talking to a celebrity, he always has one question in there at some point about, like, hey, when you didn't get that role in that movie, did that mess with your head? He always kind of has a question like that, because he's insecure. He's a very insecure guy. Even though he seems like he's totally in charge, we're insecure to varying degrees. We don't know a lot of things, and that's what this show is about and why it's real. And most other shows are like, I know everything, and I'm going to read it to you, and I'm going to totally tell you what to think, and blah, blah, blah. And that's why people like me don't want to listen to radio shows anymore. So my thought is, as I'm driving around the highways and byways of Chicago through some of the most horrendous neighborhoods of Chicago, I'm listening to this app on my phone that's streaming to me Howard Stern and other channels from SiriusXM. And I thought, I wonder if there would be an appetite for people to get Jones and Mike on a 24/7 stream on their iPhone, on their Android, and at work if you wanted to. Obviously, you got the podcast, you can download them or whatever, but I feel like that's an extra step. I feel like there's a more immediate feel when you stream something, like you're checking into this thing that's already happening. And that would be happening whether you're listening to it or not. It just feels like there's an extra step to downloading a podcast. Yeah. So if you have an appetite for a 24/7 Jones and Mike stream, we could use your help. This is expensive enough. So I'm asking if people would want that, and if they would help us support that for like 50 cents a month or something. Like, it's got to be cheap. Like, if Howard Stern is 17 bucks a month, I think that Jones and Mike has to be like 50 cents.
That works. Works yeah. For me.
And so we don't want to make money on this, but we want to know if there's an appetite for it. So as I'm driving around, and I have this app that's giving me Howard Stern and all of these shows streaming to me. And so I plunk in my earbuds, and then I also turn on my Waze app. And so, because it, you know, another thing that I hate about radio stations is they're constantly giving me traffic. And it's like, really? Really? Who is listening to the traffic reports on the radio? That really?
That's, I need to know. You're going to see that go away in the next 2-3 years.
I love you if you're a traffic reporter, but I got to be honest. Like, you're just, it really irks me. Yes, every morning we know that it is going to be an hour and 20 minutes into Lakeshore Drive on the Stevenson and into, you know, Congress on the Eisenhower. I don't need you to tell me that. I know that why they're doing it, they're making money on it, they're sponsoring it. But it's a waste of time, and it just bothers me. So I'm driving around, I listen to Howard Stern in my earbuds, and when I need to turn right onto Pershing from Harlem, Waze tells me to do that, and I'm set. I am set. But Waze is having me go through the most horrendous neighborhoods, which is why I'm getting more empathetic and sensitive about the plight of urban dwellers. Chicago is a complete crap hole. It is so dirty and full of garbage. And like the nastiest neighborhoods, and you know you're in the hood when all of a sudden people are in the middle of the road. Like, they literally walk in the middle of the street. The garbage quotient kind of goes up a little bit in the hood, but there's just garbage everywhere and rusted out infrastructure. Like, this is really, it's a great town, but it's a nasty town in many respects.
Well, it's also, it's recognized as one of the clean, as much as you're saying that, it's recognized as the cleanest big city in the country.
Oh my God, how bad is Atlanta if this is clean?
And I would say, yeah, but here's the thing though. Atlanta is just an enormous suburb. To me, I'm looking at what's going on in the city, and I think to a degree it's being cleaned up too much. And I'm looking around at the neighborhoods and what's happening, and I think it's really losing its kind of urban edge. If you go now, have you seen this week they came out with DNA info, they did release more sketches of what the neighborhood around Wrigley is going to look like after they're doing their build out. Mm. And to me, it is. And they just tore down the McDonald's that was across the street from Wrigley Field. It's going to go up into a new complex. And when you look at these drawings, to me, it is stomach churning.
Really?
Of what they're doing to the city. It's turning into, to me, that area and Chicago in general. I liked the, I want it to be safe. I want people to be happy and safe, but I like the grittiness of it. I like the urban feel of it. And now I'm looking around at all these neighborhoods and I'm seeing really what's happening to the city. And I think it's becoming a little bit too suburban. It's becoming a little bit too cleaned up.
Really?
What they plan to do in this Wrigley area is so... one of my favorite things was when you would get off the red line and you'd walk to the game and there was a garage where people were working on cars. There was a place where people were coming in and out of their dry cleaning and getting their dry cleaning or grocery shopping or coming home from work. And in the middle of all this urban dwelling was this ballpark. And then when the game wasn't on, it was kind of this almost desolate, kind of hauntingly, beautifully haunting, like quiet, serene area. I like that. It kind of made it seem more authentic as opposed to any other ballpark in America now where it's surrounded by a larger entertainment district. And now I'm seeing Chicago start establishing more of these larger, whitewashed entertainment districts.
I got to ask you, I don't believe that that's how most stadiums are. It feels like most stadiums are out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, but they are out in the middle of nowhere.
I don't feel
that's
like
that
most stadiums are actually part of a larger entertainment district.
Well, like out in Seattle, their football stadium, their baseball stadium, they're all together. You're now seeing the in Detroit. They're now in Minnesota. They're now putting all of their stadiums next to each other, and it's a large. They have their own ramp to go into. It's at the edge of town.
Well, right, but that's all there is there. It's not like there are. That's what makes Wrigleyville unique.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
But there's things to do, not because there's a neighborhood there necessarily.
No, but now you're eliminating the neighborhood and you're putting in this completely whitewashed entertainment district where when you look at those drawings, go back and look at the drawings of what they were going to do with Wrigley Field. And they had like a little, they're going to put up a little hotel, and little museum and all of that. Have you gone down to Wrigley lately? The hotel that they're building up towers over Wrigley Field.
So that's where that like weird triangle property was like west of the park.
Yes. That there's
like
now,
along Clark.
Yes, there is now a steel structure there that towers over Wrigley Field.
Really?
All those other places where there used to be the Improv Olympic Theater, all the other restaurants and bars, they're all getting torn down now. And they're going to be putting in these mixed-use developments where they'll have a Best Buy and they're going to have a movie theater and all of this other stuff that what made Wrigley beautiful was here's this neighborhood and there happens to be a ballpark at it. Now there's an entertainment district.
And when people happen to live around that entertainment district.
No,
it's plunked right in the middle of a neighborhood.
No, I don't look. No, but what you're doing is you're taking out what was there and now you're putting in this. Now you're putting in an AMC. Now you're putting in a Best Buy. Now you're making it. It's not the neighborhood that it was. You're taking out all of these what were smaller businesses and what were truly neighborhood businesses, tearing them out, putting in major hotels, major corporate retailers, major corporate movie theaters.
Yeah, it's like I'm doing the show with Kurt Cobain.
No, but it changes what was how many of those places. You were making my point earlier when you were saying, oh no, all these ballparks, they're out, they're out in suburban locations. They're out at the edge of town. You're taking away what was this genuine urban feel where someone would get off work at 5 o'clock, get off the L, happen to be walking by with their dry cleaning over their shoulders. They were coming back from work, stopping by Murphy's and going, and looking up and seeing the W flag and going, hey, what happened? What happened? And then there was this exchange.
So the concentric circles away. So what you're describing, big box stores, be that as it may, the concentric circle of commerce has always been there around Wrigley, Murphy's, Cubby Bear, whatever, Billy Deck's burger joint, whatever the hell. But so it sounds like a lot of that is just being replaced by these chains and big box joints. That's your problem with it.
Yes.
Really, it's not like they're eminent domaining, you know, a bunch of houses in the area, knocking them down to put Best Buys. They're just replacing the old joints, the neighborhood taps. Really, they wouldn't exist if there wasn't a ballpark there necessarily.
Well, no, but even the neighborhood ballparks, some of those taverns shut down when the Cubs aren't on.
Exactly.
When the Cubs aren't there year round. I'm saying it kills the atmosphere that I had always cherished, the urban environment of it. Now it's going to be a place that's up and running 365, 24/7, because there's going to be hotel patrons. The patrons are going to go across the street to see the movies. They're going to go across the street to shop at the Best Buy. They're going to go across to eat at these monstrosity restaurants that are going to go be built in place. And it's losing the atmosphere that made it unique. You go to Wrigley now, and when Chris Bryant walks, we had great seats where we were six rows off a home plate.
Close that I was afraid to say anything bad about Joey Votto, because I was afraid that jerk face was going to climb three rows in and beat my ass.
And then
I would whisper things about it.
And every single time that those guys went to the plate, we all looked up at that massive TV screen, because it was just in your face. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The atmosphere is completely changing. You go down to North Damon in Milwaukee in that Bucktown Wicker Park area, double doors closing. There's supposed to be a Shake Shack that is going.
What is that? Is it a strip club?
No, you would wish, but it's not. It's like a little burger, like a local burger joint.
Really? They're going to replace the double door?
And if you went
with
down,
a burger joint?
Go down to that neighborhood now. It's all restaurants and bars and taverns that are backed by huge money. It's these completely whitewashed facades. There's Taco Bells on that street now. Where there used to be a Big Horse Burrito, a little hole in the wall place.
Yeah.
Now you're getting these gloriously scoured and washed and cleaned and ready to serve you Taco Bells. And now where there used to be on the corner there, where you used to see like some guy out there banging away on steel drums trying to make like a dollar or two, now there's this massive Walgreens that has gone up in its place. And what I'm saying is that is bothering me as someone who lives in the city. What the city was kind of a grittier environment where there was real character to it. Now I'm saying down by Wrigley Field and down in that Wicker Park Bucktown area, there isn't a real feel there anymore. It doesn't feel like Chicago.
Yeah, and I could kind of dig that, what you're saying there. Like, so when I went to college at Illinois State, don't judge, but I know you are, Bloomington Normal is like, there's a million places to eat, but they're all like national chains. There's no like local flavor. And that was one of my biggest gripes with that place. It was like, oh my God, Big Apple Bagel and McDonald's and Burger King and like all these giant chains. What was here before those? Give me some of those. Give me some of those joints.
And that's what I'm saying. That is leaving Chicago. So when you go to brag about Chicago and you go, it's a city like no other. Tell me about the classic places. Tell me about those are going away. And we're just stepping into this Disneyland environment.
So when was the golden era? Because it appears to me that like Wrigleyville or the area around Wrigley Field was a complete L-O-L in the 70s. Like, it was a dangerous neighborhood. It was dirty. Lee Elia, when he famously did his rants in 1984 or 3 or whatever about, most of the world is out working. The other 3,000 people come here. Like, you know, it was the stands were filled with ne'er-do-wells.
Right. It changed.
And half-filled at that, maybe, at best.
In the 90s.
So 90s was the golden era of it being safe, livable, nice, but still with that local kind of gritty flavor that you prefer.
Yeah, I would say like the mid-90s to like the early 2000s. It started to progressively change. Strangely, I would say for me, if you go back, you could even look at this as a time marker. Kerry Wood's 20,000 strikeout game, 20,000.
It was a good game, but not that good.
Jeez.
His 20 strikeout game.
You can only have 27 strikeouts. They cap it.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, you could have more than that. You could have one or two more in some kind of odd scenario, but you can't have 20,000.
Well, it was a one-hitter, so the most he could have had was 28. No, there's only 27 outs in a game.
Someone drops a pitch, if someone drops the third strike and the guy gets to first base.
Oh, and that happens 10 times. Theoretically could have had 37 strikeouts.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that.
Okay.
No, because that would have been a strikeout.
No.
There's only 27 outs in a game.
But it still is registered as a strikeout.
Wow. Mind blown right now.
Yes, but now the idea of getting to 20,000 is a little bit to swallow.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's always 2-0 and K, so I went 20,000. But Kerry Wood's 20K game, 20 strikeout game. If you ever see that, if you ever go on YouTube, you'll see in the background that there are construction workers that are at that point. This is 1998. They're starting to build the rigging for not the bleacher seats, but the rooftops. So once the rooftops went in, I think that's when people really started to think this can even be more than just what's going on in the stadium. To me, that's where it really kind of got crazy. So when you look at that 20 strikeout game, you see the construction workers building the rooftops out to what they are now, which are kind of sports clubs, whereas before it was just some college kids with a Weber grill and some fold-out chairs sitting on a roof. That, to me,
it's so unbelievable that like it took the Dumbos generations to figure out, oh, we could actually sell tickets to people up here.
Yeah.
How unbelievable.
Well, but that is the start of it.
So
grew into something that
was
great for a time.
Do you blame Daly or do you blame Rahm? Someone's got to be to blame. I know other radio shows that suck would have like Alderman Tom Tunney on.
Well, yeah,
and his
he's
partner.
Just a patsy.
His partner would be in the green room, and Alderman Tom would be in here telling us all about initiatives.
Why would he bring his partner down?
He's the only gay alderman I know, so of course they travel together.
You know this?
I'm assuming. Okay, but we're not going to do that. We don't really want to get to those answers. We don't want to hear their pablum. There has to be someone to blame. So who do you hold accountable, Jones? It has to be Rahm, right? Because he's the one who cut the deal with Ricketts. Or is this a citywide thing? Because if you ask me,
the city needs
to be upgraded. It is a crap hole.
It's a citywide thing. I wouldn't say it's down to what you could say. You could point out certain neighborhoods of, okay, that's when the change started, or that's when the change was official and it's no longer what it was. But I don't think you can put the decision down to any one person. I think what's happening is there are people, it's a finance thing. If you can make money, people will not stop doing that. But I would ask the question, they're doing it at what cost? And they won't care that I'm asking that question, because the money that they're going to, even if I'm less inclined to go down there, there will be more people that will be more inclined to go down there. I'm just saying that you're missing something, and that when you want to go forward 20 years from now and tell me what makes Chicago special and how it's like no other city, I don't think you can really get away with that when you have a Best Buy on every corner and a Taco Bell that serves you low and brow.
That's right.
Well, you know, halfway down the block. I don't think that makes, at that point, I go, okay, even though it will become this great Disneyland party place and I'll probably still have a good time down there, that area of the city down by Wrigleyville, how is it any different than St. Louis?
I work in Fulton Market, right off of Fulton Market and just west of the Kennedy. And it's weird to me in the morning as I have to dodge all of these dudes packing trucks on Fulton Market. It is like the corporate sprawl has made it out to that area, but like that little street is still probably very similar to what it was 50 years ago, 100 years ago.
It is.
Like the dudes like chucking fish and like you know,
meat packing district.
Yeah, the meat packing dudes or whatever. They're very polite, by the way. I figured they'd be pricks, but they're not. They're all trained to not run over the people that are working to, you know, walking to our desk jobs. So they're very nice, but you do have to be on your toes. You will get run over by a semi if you're not careful. But I do kind of dig that street and that kind of like semi-dangerous journey I take every morning. Because it's like, wow, this is kind of like what it was like in the 40s or something. but it's going to be maybe a couple more years before these places are replaced by chain restaurants and stuff, steakhouses, Shula's or something.
Absolutely.
So I kind of smell what you're cooking. On the other hand,
I don't like it.
On the other hand, when Waze is taking me through neighborhoods where all of a sudden it's like I can't even look down at my app because there are people standing in the middle of the mother grabbing street in the hood.
You just find your own directions.
No.
Don't go changing my city.
No. But
because you want to feel better on your Waze route.
No, there's just a lot of neighborhoods that have to be upgraded. They have to be upgraded from an infrastructure standpoint. The people have to be... A rising tide raises all ships. There has to be a way to not gentrify them out of their own neighborhoods. But for God's sakes, they need an Aldi. They need an Aldi and they need a place to go so there's not like, 20-something dudes standing in the middle of the street with nowhere to be. In the rain, too. In the rain.
A Whole Foods in Inglewood. That's just insanity.
That's blowing your mind.
It's blowing my mind, and I can't. What a stupid idea!
Well, wait a second. Is it because you're being kind of racist?
No,
you're
go
being
with
kind
an
of
Aldi.
Elitist. Well, wait a second though. You're acting like there's no money in Englewood. Don't break my speakers. I'm sure that Whole Foods did the homework, and they know that there's some people there with dough.
I think they've made a mistake.
This is a mistake they'll regret.
Yes. But when the Aldi, when the Super Aldi moves into the new location, that's when things start to really take off.
Aldi's like the lower-priced organic version of Whole Foods. Like, actually organic, though, not just marked-up organic.
Right.
And it's affordable. More Aldi's in the hood. That's going to be your
yes.
platform.
Aldi to save the day.